Unfortunately, this radio show is currently off air.
Well, it looks like we made it. Out of the long, dark winter to the brilliant light, almost, of British summertime. So in celebration, in this transmission, we've got songs and stories of light.
Now, a moment of reflection.
We are subterranean. We live in cellars, in bars, in dark rooms. We live underground, but we are looking for the light.
Goethe's final words, more light. Ever since we crawled out of that primordial slime, that's been our unifying cry, more light. Sunlight, torchlight. Candlelight, neon, incandescent, light to banish the darkness from our caves, to illuminate our roads, the insides of our refrigerators. Big floods for the night games at Soldier's Field. Little tiny flashlight for those books we read under the covers when we're supposed to be asleep. Light is more than watts and foot candles. Light is metaphor. Thy word is a lamp unto my feet. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Lead kindly light amid the encircling gloom. Lead thou me on. The night is dark and I am far from home. Lead thou me on. Arise, shine, for thy light is come. Light is knowledge. Light is life. Light is light.
Your life. Don't let it be clubbed into dank submission. Be on the watch. There are ways out. There is light somewhere. It may not be much light, but it beats the darkness. Be on the watch. The gods will offer you chances. Know them and take them. You can't beat death, but you can beat death in life. Sometimes, the more often you learn to do it, the more light there will be. Your life is your life. Know it while you have it. You are marvelous. The gods wait to delight in you. That's a beauty.
When I first met my marvellous man, the red light on symbolised our love, lust and more. The orange light came next, which was the fire that fuelled our romance. After a few years, the light turned green, for go or for a chilling of minds. Now we keep the light firmly off, best for everyone.
Yeah. the aerial forecasts for the next 168 hours. Viking, North of Sierra, South of Sierra, southeasterly 3, rain at times, visibility good, calm. 40s, chromaty, 4th, time, dogger. East or southeast, 6 to gale 8, hesitation, rain or showers, hope, moderate or good. A shallow German bite. Southeasterly veering southwesterly 4, rain later, rising temperature, pressure building, wild speculation, good. Humber, Thames, southeasterly 5 to 7, occasionally gale 8. Caution veering southwesterly later, goosebumps, dizzy spells, still good. Dover, White. Southeasterly veering southwesterly 7 or severe gale 9. Head-on impact, continents collide, atoms split, dilated pupils, elation, vertigo, visibility 0. Portland, Plymouth, Biscay. Southeasterly becoming cyclonic, 6 to gale 8, snow falling, defenses breached, Icelandic calm, rapture, good becoming moderate. Finisterre. South bearing southwest 7, severe emotional freefall 9, stomach cramps increasing 5 or 6. Rain and thundery showers, bruising, discord, structural damage, moderate becoming poor.
Malin, Hebrides, cyclonic becoming reality, occasionally gale 8, backing southerly later, broken and disorientated, rain or showers, moderation lacking. Bailey, southerly veering westerly 6 or 7, decreasing 4 or 5. Numb, defeated, freezing fog, strand, dull aches, poorly. Fair Isle Faroes, southeasterly becoming cyclonic, then westerly 5 to 7. Toil, occasional stupidity, sullen, rain, moderate or good. Southeast Iceland, southeasterly 5 to 7, twisted occasionally gale 8. Veering westerly and south, corroded and empty, ice forming. Heligoland, planet struck and spellbound, the wreck of matter and the crush of worlds.
I remember when I was growing up, I had a friend who was really scared of one of his neighbours. And this neighbour was an old widow who lived a couple of doors down. And he particularly was scared because she did strange things at night. And I remember one school holiday, I decided to follow up on this. I didn't really quite believe him. So we sneaked out of the house late. We were very young. And we crossed the road so we could get a vantage point without being too near. And my main memory is this blinding blue light coming out from the front of the house, illuminating the front garden, and squatted over the front garden was this lady, an old lady, white hair, in a nightdress, and she was bent over the grass, cutting it with what appeared to be large scissors. And there was something hilarious and kind of terrifying about that image for a young boy. And one of us made a noise, and she appeared to notice us without really being distracted from a task of cutting the grass at an hour approaching midnight, bathed in blue light from our house, with a pair of large scissors. And the only embellishment the story was given over the resulting weeks when we told people at school was that my friend swore that on that night, this old lady in a nightdress wasn't wearing any knickers.
There's a blue light in my best friend's room. A blue light in his eyes. There's a blue light, yeah. I wanna see it.
There goes my last lead. I feel all dead inside. I'm backed up in a dark corner, and I don't know who's hitting me.
When I was growing up, I lived about 10 miles into the countryside, a village where there was very poor people and very rich people living in the same place. But there was this interesting character that was obviously from somewhere in our village, and she was this woman. She was probably about 25. She was tiny, really skinny, long brown hair. She was kind of beautiful, but she had that kind of, you know, when people have got a really hard face and their face is so hard that it sort of takes the beauty away a little bit. She was like this. And we used to see her. Everybody in the village knew who she was. You would just see her walking her pushchair the 10 miles into the city or the 10 miles back. She never seemed to be on a bus. She was never in a car. She was always walking. And she'd be walking the road to the city and back and around the village as well. And nobody really knew who she was. She wasn't, like, hooked into any of the social sort of networks of that village. She seemed to be a loner. And she would seem to be pushing this kid in this pushchair for like 10 years. God knows how old the kid was. But she was always a bit of a mystery. And at the same time, when I was about 12, 13, because it was quite a forested area where we lived, me and my friends used to go up, say on a Friday night, and we'd go up into the forest and we'd stay up there till Sunday, come down on Sunday. We'd go up with our rifles and our knives and hunt and build fires and build shacks and stay up there and have a great time and so on and so forth. And one of the quirks of this woman who you'd see is that she, when she was walking at night with her pushchair, she'd walk with this big torch that would light the way on the pavement, because it's very narrow pavements where we were, and there would only be pavements on one side of the road. Some bits of the road, there wouldn't be any pavement at all, and she'd have this torch that obviously was partly to show her the way, but partly so she wouldn't get run over by cars. And one night when we were up in this in the forest, and it was on a hill, and we were looking down, and we could see, me and my friends, we were sitting on this log looking down into the valley of our village, and we could see the torch coming along the road, and it was actually her, and she always walked really, really fast, and we could just see the torchlight moving along the roadway. And because we were young scallywag kids, we were in camouflage gear, and we decided that we would find out where she was going. So we made our way very quietly down into the down through the forest, down into the fields, and along to the side of the road, so that we were the other side of the hedge from where she was, and followed her at about 20 meters behind her. And she went off down some very narrow little lanes, up a lane called Lovelace Lane, which was a big hill, and the lanes were getting narrower and narrower and narrower. And eventually she made it up to the top, and we followed and found that she was living in this little caravan that was that had a beaten-up old car outside, which clearly hadn't worked for a long, long time. And she was using the car as a storage space. And we followed up and watched her from go into her caravan, go and put the pushchair up outside and go in. And there she was, and the mystery kind of unfolded by following the light of her walking at night.
Yellow lights are free, gleaming, that the shadow of grey behind me. Can you help her walk away again? Blue the colour of the water, Mariander, devil daughter.
And you dance into the shadow of a black poplar tree. watched you as you disappeared. I watched you as you disappeared. I watched you as you disappeared.
I like that song, don't you, Mrs. Lucas?
There isn't any other song.
Love me tonight.
This is Bright Lit Blue Sky by Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti.
Observed, so they said, a strange moving light in the sky, by definition, an unidentified flying object. It seemed to follow them for miles. After a time, the lighting patterns on the UFO changed. It appeared to land. It blocked the road, preventing them from driving on. They said they saw mouthless creatures approaching, who were not exactly human.
Barney? Barney? Barney, what is that?
They were captured, they said, and taken aboard the craft.
Mm-hmm.
That was the story told by Betty and Barney Hill. Virtually all scientists who've studied it are skeptical. But UFO enthusiasts think the Hill case is a classic example of a close encounter of the third kind.
Unfortunately, this radio show is currently off air.
It's 12:58 on the 31st of March 2013, and I'm standing on a balcony overlooking the Willett Estate in Hove, a 68-acre Victorian housing development covering the various roads, groves and gardens of Eton, Wilbury and Cromwell, in between Hove Railway Station and the Town Hall. If you're in the area, you can pick out the Willett Estate houses because of their use of cream or yellow gault bricks. The construction of the estate in the 1880s was the responsibility of Willett Building Services, a company owned by William Willett, who also built houses in Sloane Square, Hampstead, Kensington and Mayfair. One feature of Willett-built houses was that the light reached every room, including every part of the basement. In 1880, William moved to 1 Eton Gardens and remained in Hove until his death in 1913. William Willett's son, also William, followed his father into the building business, but is better known for promoting the idea of British summertime, the changing of the clocks in spring and autumn. In 1907, he published a pamphlet called The Waste of Daylight, outlining a system of moving the clocks forward in 20-minute adjustments each week in April, making the evenings lighter for longer. He wrote in the pamphlet, "Everyone appreciates the long, light evenings. Everyone laments their shrinkage as the days grow shorter, and nearly everyone has given utterance to regret that the clear, bright light of early mornings during spring and summer months is so seldom seen or used." Although he found some support for his ideas, his proposed system wasn't adopted during his lifetime. In 1915, 2 years after the passing of his father, William Willett the Younger died of influenza. However, 1 year later, Britain followed Germany in introducing daylight savings as a way of cutting down coal consumption during wartime. By the 1920s, William Willett the Lightsaver had become a posthumous hero as more people backed his daylight saving plan. Winston Churchill defended the system by arguing that it increased the opportunities for the pursuit of health and happiness amongst the millions of people who live in this country. Willett was cast in bronze, a wax figure of his likeness was unveiled at Madame Tussauds, and a memorial was created including a sundial on its south face, which is permanently set to British summertime. Within a few years of its introduction, most Western countries had adopted daylight saving time. Over 120 years on from their construction, most of the Willett buildings in Hove still stand, subdivided into flats, each house valued at £1 million or more. We still put the clocks forward and back in the middle of the night, delighting in the rush of spring light or rueing the passing of another summer. It is now 2 a.m. on the 31st of March 2013, and British summertime has begun. To the Willett family stands in the churchyard of St. Wulfran's in Ovingdean.
Tangled in the midst of all the trust away, you blissed inside the brain fire technology drives. Show me your dots now. Who was it that said the world was mania? Divorces since been changed. Let's lethalize our slingshots and swallow propane. You are the light, the calm and the day. You are the light, the calm and the day. Senior year abroad, I ripped the in Spain. Where is the danger? Watch out for the gypsy children in electric dresses, they're insane. I hear they live in crematoriums and smoke your remains. You are the light, the coming of day. You are the light, the coming of day.
Morning, Sicily. 8 a.m. Muchachos. Time to finish those flapjacks, knock back that second cup of joe, and get ready to greet the day.
Temperatures creeping towards double digits as this solar drought continues. 23 days and an average hour and a half of sunlight every day. No relief on the horizon. Which only makes sense because there is no horizon. Our friends at the Weather Service are calling for another storm, and as we know, they've been betting 1,000 lately. Hey, let's check the social calendar, huh? Nothing? Total blank. It's cabin fever season, people. That time of the year when four walls feel like they're just gonna come in here and choke the spirit right out of you. Time to lock away those firearms and hang tough. No way through it but to do it.
Go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into that good night. Good men the last wave by, crying how bright their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang the sun in flight, and learned too late they grieved it on its way. Do not go gentle into that good night. Brave men near death who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
And lock the door. Say the prayers you've said before. Finding warmth in your words or to a cold dark night. The morning brings the light. Oh, the morning brings the light. Yes, the morning brings the light.
From the window of her 13th story flat, across the city, she could clearly see the blinking light. It came from a 13th floor flat in a tower block several miles away. On the seventh day, he said,
I think they're sending us a message.
Morse code,
she began transcribing the flickers of light into dot, dash, dots, dot, dot, dash, dash, dot, dot, dash, dot, dot, dash, dot, dot, dash, dash, dot. Amid the transcribed babble, words and phrases merged. Through darkness to elevate, and light to dream. Stars emerge light to shine, the moonlight. Through darkness, a small cult formed around the 13th floor observation deck, transcribing 24 hours a day. Round-the-clock teams wrote down the dot, dash, dot, dot, dash. On the 13th day, she said,
"We have to go to the source of the light."
"Yes,"
he agreed.
"Let's go on a pilgrimage."
The 13 members of the pilgrimage set off at midnight under a crystal black sky. They made their way through the city, awed by its stillness and by its uncomprehending darkness. As they neared the flickering light, the group fell quiet, all hoping that the source of the lights would bring transcendence, a guiding light. At the foot of the tower block, they could clearly see that the tower was a ruin. The lift shafts smoldered, all burnt out.
"Okay, let's take the stairs."
The pilgrimage climbed the 13 floors to the source of the flickering light. At 2 a.m., they reached the 13th floor, and she went ahead and took control and opened the door of the flat from where the flickering light had beckoned. As she walked through the abandoned apartment, across the broken glass, the ripped wires and the shards of metal, and stood in the living room underneath a flickering, faulty, fluorescent light, spluttering its meaningless, random radiance across the city.
A guiding light, a guiding light, a guiding light.
And that story was based on an idea by Steve Crossan, who is now director of the Google Cultural Institute. You can look him up on Google. The following set of stories and poems are brought to you by the Caravan Ensemble and were written, performed and recorded by the Caravan Ensemble at Radio Reverb back in 2011. And these stories were contributions to their award-winning show, Anima. And the Caravan Ensemble are a collective of internationally acclaimed performers, dancers, and musicians under the leadership of Yael Caravan. You can find out more about their work at Caravan Ensemble, that's Caravan with a K, ensemble.com. And the music for this section was written and recorded by Tristan Shaw.
I'm struggling to separate myself from you. You are there on the periphery of my vision, blending with the whiteness of the walls. Your face is unchanging. I turn off the light and still I can hear your accent when I speak out loud. More than anything, I wish to separate myself from your language. I want to be free to do as I please with the stories of your body. Write new ones on it, stories of pleasure. I want to write myself on your skin so I can be as close as I can to you. Close enough to lick the salt off your forehead. I like the way you make things visible. As if you're holding a torch to my thoughts.
The pendulum, nice way, resisting closely the shadow. Trembling is the leftover light in my above tower. Restless bones in a sleeping body, by the rocking motion entangling into one. I looked at myself, laying in my arms. The darkness as the mildest caress, the flickering of light, and the whispering voice of the moon above. Det fallande mörkret i dess dunkla vrå. I remember one after another in the darkness of the narrow corridor, early morning's mist and distant hymn. Expectation in a city of awakening, embraced and carried by light, step by step, well carried rehearsals. I was warning the trail, whispering my path behind, frozen landscapes engraved in my veins, the candles buried, bewildered, and forever lit.
When you are growing up as a child, sometimes the idea of darkness is associated with horror and mystery.
Horror and mystery.
In my case, the darkness and light in my childhood goes associated with a kind of wonder.
Wonder.
When I was growing up in the summer, for several years in a row, there was a kind of phenomenon or incident that happened near the coast where I came from. And is that the water coming ashore, it was color reddish, brown.
Reddish, brown.
And at that time, it was not very pleasant to swim, and everybody was commenting in the color of the water. But later, we realized that this color of the water was that it was full of plankton.
Full of plankton.
What the plankton, what the whales feed on. The side effect of that is that late at night, although we were not always allowed to go late at night, when you swam in the same waters, the water became phosphorescent.
Phosphorescent.
So if you throw stones on the water, you will see lots of sparks into the sea. Things got better in the late years of my childhood, because we remember going out late at night and swimming naked into this sea that was full of sparks and phosphorescent bodies.
Full of phosphorescent bodies.
Si tirabas pedras a agua no medio da noite oscura.
My eyesight is not perfect, so to me there's a big difference to what I see in artificial or natural light. In daylight, I simply see more and more detail, and many more shifts and nuances of color, shade, and movement. To me, daytime is for reality, physical activity, and, well, anything really, based on my visual perception of actual matters and objects. Nighttime is for work and activity in the light of the electrics. Things related to mind, concepts, digital, and the visual digital. It's also for emotions and sensations based on the tactile and sensory. The work I do in the day is very different to the work I do in the night.
Light is about exposure. I've been exposed more than usual to situations, and I had to get involved. I just want those problems to be in the shadow so that I don't have to solve them. Mourning friends, unbalanced friendships, It seems like stuff that stays unlit, invisible for most people. But they are revealed to me with the responsibilities, worries, and commitment it implies. It's like most people are walking in the dark, not seeing a dying body on the side of the road, and I instinctively look in that direction with a torch. The way I lead people up, the way I'm exposed, I'm the sun, but I'm afraid of my own light. I make my darkness side more visible, as people confide in darkness, but I lit them up, and they feel warmed and different, and they need me too much. On me dit que je vois la lumière des gens autour de moi, il me semble chercher ma façon de les éclairer, comme des papillons de nuit. Je suis une lumière joyeuse et délicieuse qui les met en valeur, mais suis-je mise en valeur? Quelle lampe m'éclaire? Quelle lampe me plaît? Quelle lampe m'éblouit? Je n'éblouis jamais, je n'oublie jamais. Le soleil veille et surveille, je dors, je ne ferme pas la lumière, je ne dors pas. La lumière de l'ordi me tient artificiellement éveillée.
So when I was around 9 or 8 years old, I stayed in my sister's house that at the time she was staying in the house which my grandparents have built, but they were already deceased at the time. And I remember one night waking up with a kind of fear and excitement at the same time. I could hear noises, and everybody was sleeping in the house already. And I was terrified, but there was something that as if called me to go to the corridor to see what was happening. And it's quite weird because when you're frightened of something, or when there's noises, which has happened to me in other occasions, I just try to be as silent as I could and just kind of disappear. But here it was like a mixture of wanting to go to see what was there, what was this kind of indescribable noise. So I slowly shivering with fear and at the same time with this kind of like almost anticipation for something, I went to the door of the room, and there is a corridor, and I think I've said before, not only my grandparents lived in this house, they've also built it with their own hands. So I arrived to the corridor, and on the wall across me, across of the door and where I was standing, there was a shadow that was exactly as if the shadow of my grandfather. I never met my grandfather. He died before I was born. And I just remember standing there, and there was not even any rational thought about it. And until today, I'm not really sure if it was a vision of something else, if it was a dream, or if it was a reality. But I had a feeling as if it was the only time that I actually saw him, really, and our encounter in this reality, as if he has come to present himself to me. And I really remember it now so clearly, this clearly defined shadow, my grandfather, that was quite tall, bald, and went well built. There was nobody in the house that was like him, so I couldn't have been confused. There was my sister and myself. So who knows what it might have been. I also wrote that I wouldn't believe this story from someone else, but I guess everything is possible, apparently.
That was Words and Music About Light from the Caravan Ensemble, from their Brighton Fringe award-winning show Anima from 2011. To find out more about the Caravan Ensemble and what they're up to, caravanensemble.com, or check our website for a link. Currently, offair.com.
Light in the light.
Currently off air. Getting frisky in your aural cavities.
Contributors to this transmission were Simon, Suze, Yael, Tristan, Sarah, Marion, Shalice, Linda, Steve, Tamar, Bruno, Fred, and Chris in the morning.
Have a technical term for this part of the program. We call it the end.